Welcome to Hazard Class, the podcast created for and about you, the emergency responder.
Welcome to the show. I'm Mark Norman.
I'm Jesse Taylor.
And I'm Dave Godin.
And this is Hazard Class, the show where, if you're not careful, you just might learn something. And I will say this, gang, if you like meters, if you like technology, and you like how they all sort of work together, you're going to love this show and you will learn something. Because on this show, we're talking about categories of technologies and sort of how that relates to the performance of a technology and how those categories are defined by this scientific body called SWGDRG, which we'll get into in just a minute. But how they apply scientific principles to how different technologies work together. Dave, have I pretty much summarized that?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's important to note that we're using SWGDRG just because it's one of the more well-defined standards. Every organization has a level of standard that's very similar to that when it comes to talking about technology. But I think SWGDRG is the most well-developed because it's meant to be used in a court of law.
Yeah, yeah. So we'll define what SWGDRG is, and Dave's going to get into some of the details there. Before we get into the show, we have to answer the trivia question from the previous show. And for those folks who don't remember, the question was this. On September 12th, 2011, so going back several years, New England Patriots played the Miami Dolphins Monday Night Football. It was reported that Tom Brady threw for a record 517 yards, career high. Now, the only thing relevant here is the number 517, 517. And the question was, going back to that show, was the statistic of 517 reported to the correct number of significant figures by ESPN and all those other outlets? And Jesse, I know you know the answer, so what's the answer and why?
I'm going to give the answer as a big N-O, and that's not nitrous oxide. That's a negative Ghost Rider. And the reason is because on the football field, every yard is marked. And so therefore, we should be able to estimate a fraction of yards between those marks. So we could have, on a 100-yard football field, four significant figures.
All right. If this is yet another attempt to come after the New England Patriots, I want to say as a firm Bostonian and a Boston-based company that I do not appreciate this.
No, 517 is good, but 517 point what?
Point something. And here's the thing, Jesse, you're exactly right. In significant figures and making measurements, right? When there is a graduation, as we call it, and that would be the 1 yard markers, you sort of guess at, so example, if the ball is placed by the referee in between two hashes, then technically you should guess, well, it's at the, 17 and a half yard line or 17.3. You guess at it, right?
Right.
And then the rules of significant figures state that when you add up all those measurements, you keep that least significant digit, which would be the tenths place, the point place. So you're right, Jesse. It should have been reported to 517 point something.
Yeah.
And Dave Godin, what do you think of the relevance of that question?
I think, as with all levels of significant figures, there's a practical application and then there is a scientific application. And I think the 517 is probably fine because no one's ever going to come close to breaking that record except for Tom Brady himself.
Well, you do hear him say, fan. Right? Like you watch a game and say, oh, the ball's on the half yard line. You
right.
hear them, like when close to the goal line. So here's the bottom line. We did have one winner of the 908 yoga mat. She, however, is an employee of 908 Devices. So we have to give her, and now I have to clarify because we're learning as we go. Employees and their families are not eligible to win. So, Alyssa is sending her the yoga mat.
Nice try.
There will be another trivia question at the end of this show.
We got a good one.
We got a good one, Jesse, lined up. But before we move on to the topic of today, which is these categories of technologies, I want to acknowledge all those emergency responders.
Yes, thank you.
Absolutely. And all those brave men and women who put on the uniform every day and keep us safe. Military, fire department, hazmat, law enforcement, three-letter agencies, you name it. We hope you're listening. And we appreciate what you do. God bless you. And thanks for keeping us safe. So, with that, we're going to get into the meat of the show. And that is this, group called Swig Drug. And Dave is going to talk more about that, but how they categorize technologies. And Dave, before I throw it to you, one thing is I want to kind of relate back to a previous show we did on figures of merit. We kind of talked about, you know, the significant figures, but these categories are kind of based on that, especially as they relate to selectivity, right? Mm-hmm. And how well a technology can tell one thing from another. But Dave, you're a forensic scientist, got your master's from BU. I'm just curious, Swig Drug, it's SWG. Drug, D-R-U-G. It's the scientific working group for the analysis of seized drugs. I think they got lazy with the acronym. Like they started with SWG and said, what do we call the rest? Just write drug.
Hey, you know, never underestimate the value of a good acronym. It's more than likely right? that they came up with the acronym first and then decided on what those letters mean, because that's how a good federal agency always operates. That's a really good point. So Swig Drug, Scientific Working Group for Seized Drug Analysis, was originally run, spearheaded, maintained primarily by the FBI. And that's transitioned a little bit recently. So after the NAS report for forensic scientists, we've transitioned a lot of those organizations and those rules and those internal regulations into Organization of Scientific Area Subcommittees under NIST. And so now you can find the updated standards under ASTM E2329-TAC-17. So in case you want to follow along and read up on them after the show.
Sorry to interrupt you, Dave. Yep. As a a civilian, the TAC. You always say TAC.
Dash.
Dash. So if you don't know, Dash means TAC.
Oh.
But yeah, and there's a bunch of acronyms he threw at you, you know, per the government. So look them up. But Dave is on top of all these things. So, yeah. Dave, what was the whole point of the Swig Drug recommendations? What are they trying to achieve with these recommendations?
Absolutely. So really, all they're trying to do with these recommendations is improve the fidelity of the analysis performed by a forensic scientist to ensure that we're meeting the appropriate legal standards. And so obviously these were meant for labs, but as we'll discuss, there's nothing wrong with bringing laboratory best practices to the field, particularly in principle. And we're going to be primarily discussing Swig Drug as a principle guideline, not a hard, fast rule for us to use in the field as first responders to increase the fidelity of our operations.
Yeah. So a couple of things there. We're going to use the term Swig Drug as a general term, although as Dave has discussed, it refers to, you know, some other organizations and ASTM methods. We'll use the term Swig Drug to apply to this. I also want to make sure our listeners know what we mean by fidelity, because we're going to use that term a lot. I brought it up here, Dave, on Google. This is the dictionary definition of fidelity. It says faithfulness to a person, cause, or belief demonstrated by continuing loyalty and support.
See, when I Googled it, I just found a Boston-based investment firm. But I guess we're not giving a free copy today. I don't think either of those Googles is correct.
Sexual faithfulness to a spouse or partner.
I sincerely hope that's not what we're here selling with our mass spectrometer.
I think this one relates the degree of exactness with which something is copied or reproduced.
I think that's probably our most accurate definition.
Well, those are the definitions, but JT, which one of those relates back to our figures of merit?
Oh yeah, the final one.
Yeah, and what do we mean by reproducible results?
Yeah, we're talking about precision.
Precision measurements. So that's what it's about, right, Dave? Is how well can a certain technology sort of reproduce its results and how reliable it is. So does that kind of sum it up, Dave, in terms of what they're sort of trying to achieve? And I just want to clarify, Dave, SwigDrug is after sort of what is a legal definition of an identification in a court case. Mm-hmm. But again, we can apply these principles to the field. Is that?
Oh yeah, there's a great application for public safety where, you know, maybe a hazmat team doesn't need, isn't collecting evidence, but they want to have the same certainty or fidelity of results so that they can confidently, if they need to close a school or shut down a courthouse because of public safety, they want to do that with that confidence. And so this totally applies to how they can use the analytical results with high confidence.
Right. And that's really important to stress. We're talking about this legal standard, not because of it's, you know, it's just passing some arbitrary administrative hoops and red tape. It's really based upon improving the confidence of the analysis. Certainly a court of law is just a place where you need to get that answer correct. But honestly, so is an emergency response. And so anything that we can do to mimic those best practices to increase our confidence on the ground allows us as responders to make better tactical decisions at point of contact with these threat materials.
Right.
Exactly. And anyone who's taken science classes in college, particularly organic chemistry, you learn that you can look at data from different devices and sort of piece together the molecule in certain cases. And what we're talking about is how do you utilize your tools together? And so, Dave, let's kind of quickly talk about, I'll let you sort of take this, those three categories. They're A, B, and C. We'll start with C, but what are the categories and in general terms, how are they defined by SwigDrug?
Absolutely. So we're going to talk about them in the SwigDrug terms, category A, B, and C. You've probably heard of these in other organizations, you know, these gold, silver, bronze standard when you're talking about analysis. Again, every organization has some similar guideline. But in general, when we're talking about a category C or quote unquote bronze standard technology, we're talking about something that's going to give us general class information about a material, not necessarily an entire ID. They tend to have a higher false positive rate, and they typically produce no reviewable data. So we're typically talking about like a binary alert, no alert, maybe a color change, maybe an immunoassay of some sort. And we'll go into specific technologies as they can relate to this category in a bit. But that's category C. So in general, this is our lowest fidelity category, which means it's going to give us the least reliable data.
And I just want to point out, though, doesn't mean there's anything wrong with that category. It just means you need to understand how it fits and into the bigger scheme of analysis. So we'll get, as Dave said, we'll get into some specific technologies, but yeah, that's basically category C. Go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, it's how much weight you should put in its analysis, essentially, right? All right, so category B, these are more of obtaining selectivity through chemical or physical characteristics of a material rather than general class information. They're going to tend to have a lower false positive rate and a somewhat reviewable data scheme, so they might produce an indirect spectrum or something that can be reviewed, perhaps a retention time relative to a standard, but it's not inherent to the inherent chemistry of the material itself. It's more of an indirect measurement.
Yeah, so we could say B is better than C, quote unquote.
Yeah,
I don't like to use those terms.
If you want to be pithy, we could certainly say that.
But in terms of the information it produces, more specific, and it gives you some more information. Yeah, but not enough that there's inherent chemical information there. So that's kind of the category B, right?
Absolutely. And so then lastly, we have category A, our gold standard technologies. These are obtaining selectivity through structural information about that chemical. So the data that we review is directly attributed to a direct structural part of that material, as opposed to an indirect measurement or a class measurement in categories B and C, respectively. Category A is going to be our highest fidelity. It should have the lowest false positive rate and generally creates reviewable data that a chemist can take and review even farther to get you even more confidence with those results. There's nothing we can do to review a color change, but a category A will create a spectrum, which is huge for that chemical review process.
Yeah, and as Dave said, the highest fidelity, meaning the most faithful result. Google it. Look it up.
Google it up.
But Dave,
you can take that all the way to Fidelity Investment Banks.
Before you move on, how do these tie together now in terms of SWIG drug and their definition of what constitutes a legal identification, but more broadly, what is sort of a good analysis in terms of how you tie these categories together?
Absolutely. So the whole point of this section of the ASTM guidelines or the SWIG drug guidelines is that no one single technology can be used by itself to get that identification, because every technology, as we've discussed, has some false positive and some false negative rate. The goal is to utilize high fidelity technologies in a toolbox-based approach to arrive at the same conclusion in order to reduce that false positive and false negative rate and increase your confidence. And that's important whether it's a court of law or making tactical decisions on the scene. So under these guidelines, you need one technology from category A plus any other additional technology. So two technologies, one from category A. If you don't have one of those category A gold standard high fidelity technologies, you're really looking for three of those lower fidelity technologies to agree on that identification for you as the operator or as the scientist to know that you've arrived at the correct conclusion and that you've minimized your chance of false positives or negatives.
Yeah, and it really comes down to using your tools together, the tools at your disposal. And JT, before we move on, you are adamant about incorporating this into the training because, as you know, our users, they have a lot of different tools ranging from pH up to FTIR, mass spec, you name it. So kind of talk to that real quick, JT.
Oh, yeah. In training, we love the toolbox approach because every customer, especially when we're specifically training on the 908 or the MX, have multiple devices and different technologies. And so we want them to have confidence in the results or meet the legal standard for their actionable decisions that they're taking. And so we do this type of approach with using orthogonal technologies and comparing the data, the chemistry, and like even looking at what does the operator observe about the sample? And
right.
Like, does that agree with the general class of information from a category C result? Mm-hmm. And then does that by extension go along with what you got from your category A result? Did your Raman or FTIR or mass spec give you something that is corrosive like your category C technology did? And so comparing those in training is very useful for end users and operators to see how things fit together. What are the complementary strengths and weaknesses of the technologies, and where do those capabilities and limitations fit so that they can get the best use out of their devices? So we always like to train with the toolbox approach.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's a good point that you brought up. Operator knowledge, training, and experience is essentially a technology unto itself, right?
Right.
So if you as a skilled, trained, experienced operator are looking at the results from your technologies and you're saying something just doesn't seem right about this, pay attention to that, right? Like, you are a well-trained technology unto yourself, and you should certainly take that doubt and use that to explore the answers of the technology and make sure they're giving you the answer to all of the right questions and not just one of the questions. As you just saw, we Googled the same thing three different ways and got three different correct answers, but we didn't necessarily get the answer that we were looking for in that particular time and situation. Same is true of technologies.
Yeah. The bottom line is, if scientists like us use this approach, why wouldn't responders who have all these tools use the same approach? And that's what we believe in. That's what we teach. And that's how we train. So we're going to get into specific meters and technologies in a minute. But first, as you know, I have a live read.
Got to pay the bills.
All right, let's hear it.
Got to pay the bills. Ready for this one? Here we go. So, Dave.
Oh, hey, Mark.
Not Jesse, apparently. Just Dave. I was talking with one of our customers about the grant application process. I wasn't, but I have before. Holy smokes, is it complicated? They gotta secure approvals, then sift through all the available grants to find out the right one to apply for. And then, two thens, they have to fill out stacks of paperwork. You guys, I'm sure, hate paperwork, right?
Everyone hates paperwork. Literally, no one likes paperwork.
It just seems like a lot of hoops for these guys to jump through to access the funds to get the gear they need to do their job safely and effectively. Yeah, and I'm sure our customers, listeners, appreciate that. It says here. But I was relieved, me, Dave, I think I'm the one talking now.
Yep.
In this library. Yeah. I was relieved to learn that there are grant assistance programs out there. And guess what? Not the show, 908 Devices.
Not us, Mark and Dave. But
yeah, we actually offer one. And JT, apparently you're not in this conversation. I'm sorry. This is how it's written.
It's an ABC conversation, our swig drug categories. I can see my way out.
Yeah, sorry.
But Dave, get this. According to Alyssa, our program director, we've partnered up with a team of grant experts that will coach folks the entire process. Pretty cool, eh?
Yeah, that's huge. Grants are a huge pain in the rear. They're difficult to do on the civil side. They're also really difficult to do on the university side. A university might have a specific person on their staff whose only job it is to write these grants to get the funding.
Guys,
you guys don't have that. We
do. You're in a fire department. You want to fight fires. You want to go detect fentanyl. You don't be writing grants. So in all seriousness, this next one, if you're looking to procure some detection gear and need help with the grant selection and application process, send an email to grants@908devices.com. That's grants, plural, at 908devices.com. I have no doubt you'll receive a response from Kathy. Kathy's awesome.
Absolutely.
Within minutes. And then it says here, if you order this month, use the promo code Alyssa to get 10% off your entire order. What do you think of that?
All right. That's pretty significant. Is that a real promo code? We're not going to tell you how to spell Alyssa. You guys got to figure it out.
I won't tell you how to spell Alyssa. It's a secret.
You know?
I added that part. But seriously, the point is we're here to help. Grants, GRANTS at 908devices.com. We're here to help. Okay. On with the show.
Let's go.
All right.
So,
yeah. Let's talk about how these categories of technologies fit into our tactical meters. And the good news is you've already got tons of these technologies in your toolbox. We're just going to tell you where they fit in and how you can use them together. But if you do find one of these technologies that particularly perks your interest, we did just discuss how you can possibly get grant assistance for them. Let's begin with category C technologies, again, our bronze standards. These are really the meat and potatoes of a hazmat response, even though they are category C. These are things that have been tried and true that provide us some really good class characteristics about a material. And as a first responder, that's one of the first things that we want, right? We at least want to narrow it down to a hazard class.
See what you did there?
Yes, that you can make a good tactical decision about your own life and safety, about the life and safety of the community, and so that you can progress that incident so that you can get the answers you need more safely. But that category Cs are huge. So these tend to be more of detectors, right? They're going to give us that general class of information. They're going to tell us that something is there, period, not necessarily what that something is. So these tend to be things like colorimetric test kits. So if you're a law enforcement, you're probably familiar with those old NIC kits, the color test kits. If you're a hazardous material responder, we're talking about things like
pH paper,
fluorine
paper, oxidizing paper,
all of those papers that we use for a lot of our stuff. That's great. It's really important class information. Knowing something that's caustic is a very important first step to keeping myself safe. I don't need to know why it's caustic, per se, not for my initial response.
So, Dave, I think of the category C, and the other one in the fentanyl world is the BT-NEX strip.
Yeah.
They're pretty popular, and I know certainly State of Mass, they use them. A lot of people use them. It's a good sort of screen. I think of it like the pregnancy test, right? The at-home pregnancy test. You kind of see, is it positive or negative? Now, if that's positive, do you then go out and buy, a crib?
or an engagement ring.
Well, whatever the case may be.
Depending on what order you're...
You might, but from an analytical perspective, maybe not, right? Yeah. Because that's where the other categories come in.
Absolutely.
Go ahead, Dave.
And again, you have a lot of these in your kit already. They're great, and you can use them in concert to start narrowing down your hazard class and getting some general class characteristic about your threat. Once you've got that, because these tend to be quick, easy to use, and inexpensive, that's when you can really know which other technologies in your toolbox are best to that situation. So that may be when you step up to your Category Bs and your Category As. But in terms of devices or technologies that you may have in your toolbox already as a Category B technology, a lot of you probably have some form of IMS-based vapor detector. That can be the JCAD, the Saber 4000, the ChemPro, I believe, is also an IMS base. It's more of a civilian JCAT.
It's a multi-sensor detector, but yeah, it does use IMS mm-hmm. as part of it. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then on the law enforcement side, you may be familiar with perhaps the ion scan. These are very similar to their trace detectors that are in the non-vapor phase. Typically, these are what we typically see at like an airport or a port of entry monitoring, where they're using an IMS Category B technology to detect typically explosives or narcotic-related threats. All right, let's move on to the gold standard of technology.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Good news is that you probably already have a lot of technology that is Category A. Most things that we put in the hands of responders are either Cat C, which again are more detectors trying to find that threat class because that's their primary mission, or they're Cat A, because we need to draw some really important conclusions after we've detected our hazard. So Category A's that you may know and already own, FTIR. This is, again, one way of doing IR spectroscopy, but it's the one that's most commonly fielded in the hands of emergency responders. You've got Raman technology, so it's another optical tool, another bulk detector, and we've talked a little bit about those. And you may be fortunate enough to have some sort of mass spec-based system, either alone, like with the MX908 high-pressure mass spectrometry, or as part of a fielded, ruggedized GCMS system. So you'll see these sometimes in lab units who also do field work, or some of the really well-funded emergency response organizations who are really responsible for getting a near legal identification, such as civil support teams and other things of that nature. They're, again, that's worth mentioning because a GCMS is mass spec Category A, and it's tied to that GC Category B, and so that it is two technologies put together, and that's increasing the confidence of your analysis.
Yeah, and Dave, I'd like to point out, so they mentioned this in the SWIG drug recommendation. So a hyphenated technique, GC mass spec is one of them. There are many. There's GC FTIR. Yeah. There's LC mass spec. There's so many of them in the analytical world. Mm-hmm. But GC mass spec, why it's kind of the laboratory gold standard is because it, by definition, combines.
Has two categories. Okay.
The B, right, Dave?
That's absolutely why it is often referred to as the gold standard, and it is often the last stop in a laboratory analysis. But it's worth mentioning that the important or the highest fidelity portion of that is that mass spec. The GC is really almost a sample prep mechanism at that point.
Right.
That's correct.
Yeah. But one last point, and we do talk about SWIG drug. Again, every organization, NFPA, has some vague guidelines around this. The military has some vague guidelines around this. We just like the SWIG drug because it mentions specific technologies. Another thing that's important to note that's highlighted in this section of SWIG drug, and I want to bring this up, is that it's these technologies need to be being run on a validated method against a validated threat by a validated and trained operator, right? So it's not just technology. Mm-hmm. It's about making sure that technology is being used for things that it has been, you know, evaluated against by an operator who has been trained to use that technology.
So if my six-year-old niece is measuring stuff on the MX908, not necessarily, you know.
But she probably could, is the point, because our simple intuitive interface is so easy that a six-year-old niece could use it.
Right.
But the point is that, yeah, the training and experience of the operator goes into that as well. And I want to point out, so I went back to the Category C. I mentioned the pregnancy test. Again, if you take a home pregnancy test, you should go then to the doctor, the OBGYN. He or she will then order other tests. So a category A, like the MX908 or one of those, it's kind of like having, if you have that in your toolkit along with these assays, it's like having an OBGYN right in your toolbox.
An ultrasound.
What do you think?
I like it.
Makes sense?
That's fair.
I like to use analogies.
There you go.
They don't work. And Dave, I want to clarify a point because this is, again, kind of your wheelhouse. So Swig Drug talks about these combinations of categories we mentioned earlier in the show. An A plus a B or a C, or three from B or C. And what they're saying is, well, those should all agree to constitute a legal, you know, identification. Now, I know Jesse and Dave, and we all do training with our customers, and we say, especially for street drugs, which are heavily cut for the most part, use your technologies, but they might not all agree because, for example, your FTIR Raman might only see the cutting agent, whereas your BTNX or a colorimetric, and then your MX might see the trace drug. So Dave, kind of recap what we mean by how this applies to the Swig drug standard.
Right. And so as you mentioned, obviously having two positive results from two substantially different technologies is the best way to get the most confident answer that you can, either in the laboratory or on the ground. And so on the field or in the laboratory, it's important to make sure that you have at least two technologies that can identify the threats that your organization's responsible for identifying and detecting. Whether that's if you're dealing strictly with bulk narcotics that are really pure, then sure, you can just use some of those bulk detectors. But if you're responsible for looking at narcotics as they appear, as they are found on the street, as they are used, you can't just have a bulk detector. And frankly, you may not just need an MX908. You might need to invest in some of those colorimetric test kits or those BTX test strips so that you have two substantially different technologies in order to make sure you're minimizing false positives. So make sure that you have the capability range of being able to do that. But as we've discussed repeatedly, negative information is still, or negative results is positive information. So in what Mark just described, using your Raman to get a positive or a negative when you're suspecting fentanyl gives you a rough idea of quantity or quantification of that, or purity of your fentanyl. So you can use all of that information to increase your analysis.
And then finally, Dave, we got to start wrapping up here soon.
Absolutely.
But for these category A technologies in particular, what else? All the vendors, Raman, infrared, mass spec, 908, what do they offer? What else do you have in your toolkit as a backup?
Right. So as we discussed, category B and A technologies, one of their strengths, one of the reasons that they're the higher fidelity technologies is because they produce a reviewable spectrum typically. And that spectrum can be sent to a chemist. Almost every field technology has a reachback support service, which is where there are, you know, engineers or scientists related to that technology who can review the spectrum and delve a little bit deeper than the technology itself. Again, this is about reducing false positives and negatives and improving fidelity. So you can use reachback to boost the confidence of your initial analysis in the field, basically kind of bumping it up a half category or treating it as a second technology. Again, all of these are just to increase your confidence in the results. So a scientist is a great way of doing that.
Again, if you have those various meters, infrared, Raman, mass spec, or what have you, and the vendor offers reachback, use it.
Oh, absolutely.
It's very, very.
I can tell you personally, as a vendor, we love hearing from our customers about how they're using the device in the field when they're getting positive results, and we can just confirm those positive results. It's nice to know that we can support you. And occasionally you guys bring limitations to our attention that allow us to improve the device for all of the operators. So communicate, send reach back. We're all here to support you, whether it's 908 devices, whether it's Smith's, whether it's Rigaku, whomever you use as your vendors, Thermo Fisher Scientific. Yep. Whomever you use, whoever makes your devices, I guarantee you they want to hear from you and they want to support you in your mission.
We could do a whole show on reachback, again, going back to my history on that and starting there and how it's evolved. But
before we do the whole show, if you just want a little taste of reachback, go to the MX files.
Yeah.
Check out the coffee reachback.
Ooh, yeah. go to the MX Files on the 908 Devices website. You'll see the great Dave Godin talking about a unique case study on how reachback was used in that
good
scenario.
Stuff.
We'll leave it at that. Yeah, it's good stuff. It's good stuff. We got to wrap up. So we have a trivia question. And JT, I know you had this one prepped. So are you ready?
I am ready.
To do the trivia question. So JT, what is the question for this week?
All right. This week's trivia question has to do with spectroscopy. Francis W. Aston, who was a member of J.J. Thomson's research group at Cambridge University, England, developed the mass spectrometer in 1914 to investigate the possibility that some elements may consist of atoms having different masses. The trivia question is, what is the term used for atoms of the same element with different mass? And why was that term coined for them? So it's a two-answer trivia question. What's the term used for those atoms of the same element with different mass? And why was that term coined for them? You can contact us at hazardclass@908devices.com with the answer and potentially win a prize.
I want to give a quick hint.
Oh, yeah. Jesse. Give the hint.
That's a great question. Again, what is the term used for atoms of the same element with different masses? Think of The Simpsons.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Excellent.
Dave, you might be too young.
I'm pretty sure The Simpsons is still running. So.
Right. I think it's been on for like 40 years.
Yeah. I don't know that there's anyone too young for The Simpsons at this point. I think people have basically died. The Simpsons are older than most of the population at this point, right?
Right.
What's in the prize closet today? What do we got? This is new. We have a 908 Devices alarm clock.
Ooh, the 908.
Now, here's what's
clock.
Interesting.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's not just a buzzer. It's Alyssa's voice,
nice.
Our program director, yelling at you.
Oh, hey, get up. So nice.
It's time to, what are you going to sleep all day? You know, she does the voiceover on our intro and outro, and she did the voiceover for the alarm clock. So,
will it also alert us to the presence of chemical warfare agents with the same fidelity as the MX-908?
Very well could. We'll have to assess that.
And but can we get Alyssa's voice on the 908 for the audible alarm?
I like it.
That'd be nice. As Jesse said, if you know the answer, hazardclass@908devices.com. Or if you just have comments, questions, accolades, complaints, or have some show ideas, hazardclass.
Love to hear from you.
908devices.com. All right, time to wrap up. Guys, any other thoughts?
Yeah, if you take nothing away from this podcast episode, just there is no such thing as a silver bullet. There is no tricorder. And honestly, even a tricorder sounds like it's three quarters. So
right?
Even then, they're using multiple different quarters to get the highest fidelity answer they can possibly get.
Not the whole thing. JT, Dave, great to talk to you. And folks, please tune in next time for another episode of Hazard Class. The show where, if you're not careful, you just might learn something.
Well, that's it. Hazard Class dismissed.